Conversations with Authors podcast. I'm your host, Alison Thompson, aka The Proof Fairy. Every week in this podcast, I talk to an author about what inspired them to start writing and what tips they would give other aspiring authors. Is Lisa Cherry. I've known Lisa for 12 or 13 years now, both personally and professionally, and I've watched in awe as her writing journey has taken her from blogging to authoring to becoming an international speaker and trainer specialising in trauma, recovery and resilience for vulnerable children, young people and their families. Her books include The Brightness of Stars and her new book Conversations That Make a Difference for Children and Young People, which are both focused on the experiences of children in care. Lisa, it is so lovely to see you. It's been ages since we last saw each other.
Yeah. It's been so long.
It has, yeah. So tell me something about your books.
Well, writing has been a bit of a journey for lots of people, you know, there's never that kind of end product that just fell off a tree. Although I guess it works like that for some people. But my writing journey really started as a very personal endeavour. I suppose at the beginning of this world that we live in with blogs and vlogs and social media, before it was a really explosive space, talking about 2009, 2010, that sort of time,
okay.
I started writing blogs. And I started writing blogs because I was in pain. And writing to me seemed to be a really good way of writing about pain and distress. But what happened, which is what led me to write books in some ways, was the response to my writing. People started writing saying, I feel the same. I've had that experience. Oh my God, you've just said what I needed to hear. And all of a sudden, we're living in a world where your own internal space becomes this method and means of communicating with people all over the world, which there was no strategy to that. I didn't see that coming. We weren't really living like that at the time. So it was all a bit of a surprise. And that led to me writing my first book, which was published by a very small publisher who just said they would organize getting it printed for me, which I did. And I decided that what I wanted to do, and this was 2012, I think, what I wanted to do was I wanted to share stories, really, stories of people who had overcome adversity. And then I wrote another book, which is really where things really shifted and changed. And I don't want to preempt all the amazing questions you're going to ask.
Say what you want to say. And
but, you know, just in terms of writing, what happened was I had this other book in me that, again, I hadn't really considered or thought about the implications of it. I just knew I needed to write it. And it was called The Brightness of Stars. Which I'm hoping is about to go into third edition. And that book was really about the experiences of adults who had experienced the care system. And I didn't really appreciate this at the time, but adults reflecting back on that experience and sharing insights about how they felt about it was not something very much in the body of writing about care. Much more of it now, but at the time there just wasn't that much in that way. And that book, I ended up speaking at a conference, and that book really changed and brought me back into working with trauma and adversity, which I had sort of stepped away from for a few years. And now I think I'll be working with that until I'm dead.
Until it kills you, one or the other. So it was your desire to heal yourself, actually, that was the inspiration for you to start writing in the first place and then sharing those stories with other people.
I guess so, yeah. And I think it's interesting because healing is such an, you know, the metaphor of the onion is so kind of profound. And I think that healing journey I started at the age of 20 when I put drink down, which was amazing and incredible. And Soul Journey talks about that a lot. Mm. But actually what happened was when I hit midlife, so I would have been sort of 38, 39, a relationship came to an end. And whatever hadn't been dealt with just kind of exploded, and the primal wound just kind of opened up again. And so that healing journey took on a whole new dimension.
Mm, and, I can imagine.
And writing was a massive part of that particular aspect of healing and recovery for me. So, yeah, very much so.
Mm. So how do you go about the writing process when you've got three books?
I've got three. One coming out in May, which is okay. Published by Routledge, which I'm really proud about because I like Routledge and
good publisher.
They came to me and asked me to write a book. So that's the thing.
Yeah.
Yes, go on. What was the question again? Yeah.
So how do you go about writing your books?
Ah, the writing process. Yes, yeah. I got all of it distracted there because each of those books had an entirely different writing process.
Okay.
So, yeah, really interesting. So Soul Journey was very much, so that was the first book that I wrote. And Soul Journey was very much a book that I wrote that was not about really my heart and soul. It wasn't meant to be the first book. Brightness was meant to be the first book, but I just didn't feel I could be that vulnerable yet. So the process with Soul Journey was really doing what I enjoy doing the most, which is gathering stories. Mm-hmm. So I sat down and wrote a lot of Soul Journey on a beach.
Very nice.
On a Greek island, yeah.
Lovely.
It was all the stuff of romance, really. There was geckos and the sea was right in front of me, and I had this rickety old table, and I was staying in this really tiny little studio that fortunately hardly anyone else was staying in, and there was a washing line, and I was sat there very alone, really. And it was a very emotional experience because I was alone in this beautiful place, gifting myself that week to write. And I think I wrote my first 15,000 words that week.
Wow.
And that's when I knew that I just had this outpouring. Mm-hmm. And lots of people wanted to be in that book.
Yeah.
Because at the time I was running a networking group that's still going, that I don't run anymore. And, you know, lots of people wanted to be kind of associated with that and wanted to be in that book. And the stories were wonderful stories of overcoming adversity. When I wrote Brightness, the stories that I gathered from there, so there was not only my personal stuff, but also I had different responsibilities. I had a responsibility to creating a book that was good for practitioners, so it was relevant, it had up-to-date legislation in it, understood some of the challenges of practitioners working around care, so social workers, foster carers, adopters, and also designated teachers and virtual schools and all of those people working with looked after children. But also, more importantly, there was an ethical concern about the people in the book. I was asking them to share from their experience, and I didn't know how much they had done that before. People trusted me.
That's a very challenging position to be in, that you're taking these stories of trauma, of personal trauma, and doing something with them. And I guess, yeah, treating them in the sensitive way that they need to be handled is quite difficult.
Absolutely. And then the third book you know, which was Steering the Mothership, was a book that, again, just kind of fell out of me, really. And I have to say, Steering the Mothership and Soul Journey, I have not really done a lot with. They haven't really sold very many copies. You know, they were very much, I think, books of their moment and time, whereas Brightness has some longevity.
Yeah.
The process with writing Conversations That Make a Difference for Children and Young People.
This is the new book out in May.
Really happened in lockdown. Lockdown hit in March, and then Routledge got in touch with me in April and asked me if I wanted to write a book. And I just, at the time, I thought, well, I'm not going to be doing much else because it's lockdown. Having said that, my year has been my busiest year yet. But at the time, I didn't know that. You know, I thought that it was, and I said, I'll do it as long as I can do it by October. Because I started my doctorate in October. So I knew I couldn't do a doctorate, work full time, and write a book. So I had to get the book written.
Yeah. And 6 months to write a book, that's no problem at all, is it? I mean, yeah, it can be done.
It can be done, absolutely. Yeah. And they had really got the idea for the book from listening to my podcast, which is why podcasting is great. And I'm always happy to be to host my podcast and to be, is a hostie a thing? I don't know if it is, but also to be part, because I think podcasts are real opportunities for people to learn all sorts of different things and think about things in a different way. And they had got the idea because I have lots of conversations on my podcast with practitioners that work with children, young people and families across all the sectors. So I said, yes, of course. So the process was actually quite different because I set the book out that I would do a chapter that was quite academic at the beginning of each section. And academic writing is very laborious because, of course, you know, you have to reference every single word you say.
it's
quite a different way of writing. And it was, you know, it's, you know, I have done academic study and I'm doing it. So it was okay, but it's a different way of writing. So I had to do that for each chapter. And then I recorded conversations with people who were operating from a relationship focused practice perspective on the front line, and tied up a few, there's some lovely little loose ends in there that I think are really nice. So I might give a little spoiler and say,
exclusive, and say, I like it.
You're getting an exclusive. I probably shouldn't, but you're getting an exclusive. So one of the people that I'm having a conversation with is Eunice, who lots of people who know me will know was my social worker when I was a child in care. And she's the head of early years and a million other things at Northampton University. And we had our conversation, and then at the end of each conversation, I do some reflections and I ask some practice questions for people to ponder. And I put there that it felt right that I should say that she had been my social worker when I was a child. And I just thought that's such a lovely little space. And then the last conversation in the book makes reference to her again. And I just think there's a real lovely circular feeling about the way the book ties up the complexities of life, really.
I was going to say, it does sound like it's kind of come full circle that she was someone who helped you when you were going through a traumatic time as a child, and that you're now kind of showcasing how she's gone on to help other people, I guess, and how she's affected many hundreds of lives, I guess.
Oh, she does. Yes, I'm a big Eunice fan.
That's really good. That sounds like, yeah, and to get a contract from a proper publisher is quite something. It's, you know, it's not easy to do these days, is it?
No, and I think, you know, let's be really brutal about this. what a publisher is looking for is what your marketing capacity is.
Yeah.
A publisher essentially wants to make money.
Exactly. Right? They're only going to take on a book that they think is going to sell. They're not going to bother unless you're going to sell. Yeah.
So I suppose I would say to anyone who, you know, is listening to this and thinking about how do I get a book contract, you know, one of the things you need to do is make sure you've got a really good platform and a really good following. Because that's one of the questions they'll ask you, you know, how many followers do you have on Twitter? How many followers have you got on LinkedIn? You know, how are you going to market your book? I mean, they don't quite ask it in that way, but you know, that's what they mean.
Yeah.
How many people are engaged in conversation with you about your work who will want to read more? That's the target question really, isn't it? So, you know, you have to be real about these things. That didn't mean I was any less flattered by it, of course.
Oh gosh, no, it's amazing. I mean, my book was republished by Jessica Kingsley, but I actually went to them and said, look, I've got this book, it's done quite well, I want to do a second edition of it, thought I'd offer it to you first. And they said, oh yes, we'd love it. So that was really lovely as well, that they read it and they thought it had value for them to publish it, but I took it to them. To have them come to you is...
it was really nice. And I have asked them if they're interested in Brightness of Stars, because I think it'd be so nice to have those sat alongside each other.
Yeah.
With Routledge. But it's a bit different to what they would normally do.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. But they're looking at it. So we'll see. Fingers crossed, it would be really good.
Yeah, if this new one does well, then
yeah, they might
they might take it on. So you said before that you've written each book a different way, and I guess you've published each book a different way as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I've tried all sorts of different publishing routes, and with varying degrees of success, and always up until Routledge, using really quite inexperienced small publishers. And that has brought its own challenges. So, for example, I won't say which book, because I don't want to talk about individual people, but you know, one of the things that's a challenge is around the whole publishing and marketing of a book. And if you've got a book that you know people will read, that your publisher has an audience for, and yet they never even tell their audience about that book, that's really problematic. So the marketing of your book, yes, you have a responsibility, but it's a team effort. And I would say to anyone, I mean, I made assumptions about how that would be marketed.
Yeah.
And that was foolish of me, because it wasn't marketed at all.
Right.
It had a page on their website.
Yeah. Okay. So you do, if you're going with a publisher, you need to find out what exactly they're going to do for your book.
Absolutely. Who is their marketing team? What are they going to do about it? How do they do marketing? What tools are they going to give you to help you market? All of that kind of stuff. There are so many, you know, it's a little bit like buying a house, isn't it? You know, you think if you've done it several times, you think you've covered every angle, you know what can go wrong, you know what's going to happen, you know what's going to come up that you didn't think about that you need to pay for. And then every time there's something new. It's a little bit like that. And I guess my assumption would have been that marketing is integral to publishing, because marketing is what sells the books, which then makes the publisher money, because you as an author, you're looking at £1 a book or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really small amount. So
less than that, even. I think it can be something like 10% of the profit from the retail price, of the net profit. Yeah. So
unless you've written, you know, some kind of soft porn book or something, not mentioning any books in particular that have grain, perhaps, you know, you're not going to be retiring. That's the point.
What
it depends what's driving you to write that book. So for me, what drives me to write is that I want people to understand the work that is going on, that I'm involved in, that there are many others in the country involved in, that there is another way to particularly pernicious narratives that cause harm where there has been harm already. So my agenda is I want you to read my book so it changes your practice and adds to the way you think about how to work. Now, everyone is going to have very different motivations for writing their book, but if you understand your motivation, that's going to help you. So the fact my other books didn't sell, my Soul Journey didn't sell very many, I think maybe 1,000 or something.
That's pretty good going. The average of book sales, the average book sales of a book is 200, I think. So, you know,
Is it? Oh my goodness. Well, I'm very pleased about that then. And the same with Steering the Mothership. I kind of, the motivation for writing those was more about healing. Whereas the motivation for writing Brightness was about changing practice.
Yeah.
And the motivation for this is about changing practice. Not only changing practice for Brightness, but also bearing witness to stories of adults that can be shared. Because before I wrote that, I didn't know really very many people with my experience. And that would be very hard to say that now, because there are so many online groups and so many connected spaces and organizations. Yeah. But back then, it didn't feel very much like that for me. Yes, there were organizations, but did you come across people in the normal course of your life who had lived in the care system? No.
Yeah.
So that for me was about making sure that there were spaces for people to talk about that experience. And also that in itself is a healing thing, that sense of isolation.
Yeah, yeah. I understand that completely. I mean, I think one of the things I've heard is write the book that you'd like to read. For me, it was when I wrote my book about ADHD, all the books that were out there were either written by American parents or they were written by medical professionals. There wasn't anything by a parent in the UK. And I can remember thinking at the time, why is there nothing written by someone like me? So when I was in that position to write the book, I wrote the book that I would have wanted to read. And that was remarkably healing for me. The word's gone out of my head that I was going to say. It's cathartic. That's the one. It was really cathartic to share my story and then to have people come back to me and say, you could be writing about my story. You could be writing about me and my child. I thought my work here is done, you know, because I've reflected my life back to other people and showed them that, other people have been through what they're going through.
Yes. And I think that was Toni Morrison. You write the book. I think it was Toni Morrison.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yes, exactly. If you can't find the book you want to read, write it.
Yeah, that's a real good tip for someone who's maybe thinking of writing but isn't quite sure what to write about. What would you like to read? What have you done that you would like to have read about?
Yeah, and I do think if anyone's listening to this and they want to write, if you've known always, like I knew deep within me that I was a writer, that was my sort of secret skill, but I just had never used it or utilized it. Life did what life does, you know, and you go off in directions. But if you've always had that sense, then I would just say, really run with that. Really run with that. If that's inside you and you're a writer, and just really practice your art, because the thing about reading writing is if it's done well, it doesn't look like it takes a lot of effort. You know, like it's a talent, isn't it, to be able to write something and get something understandable. I always think that about when I read comedy writing. I don't think I'd be very funny in the written word, you know. That's a real skill, isn't it, comedy writing, being able to make people laugh from words on a page, I think is fantastic.
And when it works well, it is effortless to read, isn't it? It's just like somebody has just picked up their pen and gone blah, 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 and you've got this amazing funny thing in front of you that just feels like it's just like you said about one of your books, it just fell out of you. That's
yeah,
when it works, it just falls out of you, I think it.
Yeah, and if you've got that feeling within you to write, just write. You know, there's this real fear, and the fear is real because the fear is linked to vulnerability, it's linked to shame, it's linked to, you know, exposing yourself, you know, and somebody having coming back and saying, well, that's not right, that's rubbish, or, you know, whatever. And I think it takes so much courage to write in the way that it does when you paint a picture. Because once you've gone to print, you're in print. I read a paragraph the other day and I just thought, God, did I reference that paragraph enough?
Gosh.
I started having panic attacks that, you know, maybe I didn't reference that paragraph enough, and it looks like it's, you know, is it going to get accused of plagiarism, or, you know, there's all that kind of, but yeah, that's the academic writing side of things. So I think, you know, you have to be really courageous and just think, once it's out there, you know, and I'm sure you've talked a lot about, you know, your title of your book and some of the conversations and discussions that you've had to have about that. I mean,
oh gosh, yes,
that's takes a lot of courage to hold that space for those kind of conversations.
Yeah. Just recently on Twitter, actually, my son pointed out that he'd had an email from someone saying, I've tracked you down because I want to tell you how awful I think the title of your mother's book is. How dare she call you the boy from hell? And he was like, but I'm absolutely cool with it. You know, she asked me at the time, I was fine. My computer gaming name is Hellboy. You know, I was going through hell. And yeah, and it there was a huge Twitter outpouring for 24 hours about it, and I was kind of like, oh, you know, this book came out seven, eight years ago, and but yeah, there is that vulnerability of you do something and you put it out there and not everyone is going to get you.
And that brings us back, I suppose, thinking about what leads you to write your book. It's that intentionality. What is your intention? And of course, there has to be a way of making that explicit for the reader, I think. And with a book like yours, that's much harder. The intention of that book, how do you convey that when the title just stops people in their tracks? You know, and they can't even get to intention. They can't even get to where you're coming from without attacking you.
There seems to be a real rift here between the UK and America. America, so, you know, my book is called The Boy from Hell, Life with a Child with ADHD. And in America, I think hell is very much a different concept to in the UK almost. You know, in the UK we say, oh, you know, I've been through hell today, I've had a hellish day. Oh, you know, hell is kind of, and maybe because we're not such a religious country, and you know, I used to say in my diary, oh, he's been the child from hell today. Well, of course I don't mean he's from a place of fire and brimstone, and you know, I think people in the UK tend to get it a lot more, and I'll see that wry smile and it'll be like, yeah, I know, I get where you're coming from with that. Whereas in America, it's very much, oh, how dare, you know, sacrilege, how dare you speak about your childhood in such awful ways. So, yeah.
But that in itself can generate sales, you know, at the end of the day, having a contentious book title, you know, can be a way of drawing people into your writing as well.
No, very true, very true. I'll have to get someone to interview me one day, I think, about my book.
Absolutely.
I'll be my own podcast girl. Well, I'll interview myself maybe. Anyway, so you said at the beginning that writing your books has been a real journey for you. So what have you learned along the way about yourself?
Oh, wow. Wow. It's been an incredible 12 years, really. It really has. From those initial pain-ridden angst blogs to where I sit right now has been incredible. What have I learned about myself? I've learned about myself what I think we all need to learn, actually, which is that we are far more than we ever think we are.
Mm.
We are capable of far more. We are made of much sterner stuff. Mm-hmm. We are more capable. All of that, I think, is something that really would be good for all of us to learn. And I think the other thing is really the power of the word. You know, people love to read. People love things to read. And there's always like talk about, you know, it's all about video now. Mm. It's all about Kindle now. It's all about, you know, we've watched it all, the rhythm of the last sort of 12 years and the way we've changed a lot of aspects of how we live. But people will always like to write and people will always like to read writing. Yeah. So I think that's worth thinking about. I also hadn't fully appreciated how much more work I had to do on myself. Okay. And I think the writing journey really brought that to the fore and has been amazing, because I do sit in a place where I feel very grounded and very content, which has come about from doing extensive, deep, relentless work. And again, you know, I mean, I'm self-employed, so I think you'll know this, part of being self-employed is a huge self-development journey that you didn't sign up for.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh yes.
You think you're just becoming self-employed, but actually it's this massive journey of discovery about how creative you are, how resourceful you are, how vulnerable you are, and how resilient you are. Mm-hmm. And whether you're a giver or a taker, because you go into this world where you find out that there's all these takers. And if you're a giver, that is not going to work.
Yeah.
You know, the givers have to hang out with the givers, because then we have this wonderful energy of reciprocity and connection and kindness. But every now and again, you know, you find yourself in a group of takers and wonder why you're completely depleted, and spinning off in a brand new car and you're struggling to pay the rent. Mm-hmm. So that sort of, I suppose, that level of self-awareness, that, you know, that kind of knowing yourself becomes a really important aspect. What are your boundaries? What are your limitations? What are you prepared to give, to do? Because when you're talking about personal stuff, you know, let's be honest about this, you know, that is deep work and needs to be resourced deeply, taken care of deeply by yourself and by those around you. What I do see is sometimes people not respecting that personal internal journey that's being shared. I don't personally allow that to happen to me anymore, but certainly when I first started talking about it, I became aware very quickly that there are times when you're having those discussions that are that people are benefiting from and you're not, you're feeling depleted from, rather than enriched by. So it's a deep journey. So yeah, I think the combination of self-employment, going back into the work that I'd done, that I tried to get away from, which was working around trauma and distress and all of that. And and just kind of being cautious about, being discerning rather than cautious, being discerning about who you will have on that journey with you.
Right. No, that's really good advice, actually. You mentioned you've gone back to the work that you were doing before. What have you been doing? Where has these books, especially the books about the care system, where have they taken you?
Well, it's really interesting, because I spent 10 years working in social work when I left uni, And then I spent 10 years working in education. And then I kind of wanted to get away from it. So I had trained in holistic therapies and I'd started the networking group with the wonderful Susie, who we both know and love.
Yeah.
And I think what I hadn't appreciated was that I hadn't got away from distress and trauma at all. Mm. That was still showing up. People were still, you know, showing up with those manifestations of distress and trauma. But when I wrote the book, I really felt that pull back into social work and education sectors. And that's when I really started developing training. So I've really spent, I would say, the last 8 years, training, speaking and facilitating on trauma recovery and resilience and relationship focused practices, working with systems, schools and organizations that do not seek to add to harm, but rather are organizations, schools, services, systems that seek to attempt to mitigate it or be part of the healing story rather than be part of the harming story. And that is what I spend my time doing, and my PhD.
Which wow.
Both of those things keep me very busy. It's an honor to do the work that I do. It really is. It's a very humbling place to be. And I take my responsibilities in that role really seriously.
That's fantastic. And that came about basically from writing that second book, I guess, that was what pulled you in that direction.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I guess it did. I mean, it was certainly the meeting of a number of different things all at the same time, which is usually how these things happen. The universe conspires to make something happen. And yeah. That's what happened. So I have nothing but great things to say about writing, and I've loved every minute. And that's I often refer to myself as the luckiest girl in the world.
That's a nice position to be in, I guess. Yeah. So what's next for you? You're doing a PhD, and you've got this book coming out in May.
Yeah, my book, Conversations That Make a Difference for Children and Young People, coming out in May, on May the 21st. I'm in my first year of my doctorate, so I'm currently trying to pull together the report that allows you to move on to year two.
Okay.
that tells everyone that you've got some vague idea about what you're doing.
Is that in a related area?
Yeah, so that research is going to be, yes, I mean, it absolutely is. I'm going to be working with adults. My participants will be adults who were excluded from school and were in the care system as children.
Okay.
Really looking at how they made sense of those experiences. Mm. So, yeah, it's absolutely all the stuff of Lisa Cherry's life's work. And it's exciting. And I'm knee deep in trying to make, you know, as much sense as possible of the ethics around it and all of that other wonderful academic stuff that means that this is where writing really gets different. You might write 200 words in a day because you have to do so much reading, and I'm just not used to that. I'm used to being able to comfortably write about 1,000 words a day, so that's been a real shift in writing.
Start of a whole new journey into academia, I guess.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know if that's for me, Alison. I have to say, I haven't decided yet, but I will certainly do something with it. The purpose of it will be the same intention as my books. It's about shifting practice.
Okay, yeah. And any more books to come?
I imagine so.
Okay.
Who knows? I imagine so. I love writing so much. I mean, I'd certainly like to think that my doctorate will be published.
Yeah.
In some form or another. So yeah.
Okay. watch this space, I guess. Yeah. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. And yeah, it's just such a fascinating journey that you've been on, from the sort of healing yourself of your childhood trauma through to the work that you're doing to help other people help young children, you know, the young children and young adults who are going through similar traumas. So it's been absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much for talking to me today. Before you go, where can people find you online if they want to find out more?
Ah, well, yes, @_LisaCherry on Twitter, where I'm often found, far too often found, some might say. And my website is lisacherry.co.uk.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you.
Thank you to Lisa for being my guest on the podcast today. Her new book, Conversations That Make a Difference for Children and Young People, is out in May 2021, and her other books, Soul Journey, The Brightness of Stars, and Steering the Mothership, are all available on Amazon. You can find out more about Lisa on her website, www.lisacherry.co.uk, or follow her on Twitter, _LisaCherry. You can find out more about me and the services I offer authors on my website, www.theproofairy.com. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then it would be great if you could subscribe, share it with your friends, and rate it. You could even leave us a review. This has been a Proof Fairy production in collaboration with my dogs. And I'll be back next week with another inspiring interview with another amazing author.